And we are live. Welcome everyone to the second episode of the Electrek podcast. I'm your host, Fred Lambert, editor in chief of Electrek. And I'm joined with Seth Weintraub, the founder and publisher of Electrek and the 9to5 network. How are you doing, Seth?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
Good.
Actually, we have some breaking news. Just happened.
That's right.
I'm going to share my screen here in a second. People who've ordered the whatever next generation Roadster, the 2020 Roadster, just got the email from Tesla saying, thank you, your reservation is complete.
Yeah, that's right. So the reservation were kind of late, even though Tesla started taking reservation right from the start from the event 2 weeks ago. And Seth, I think you placed the reservation like right away, or you at least placed the first deposit.
Literally right away.
Yeah. And you're just getting now the reservation, and we receive other reports that looks like Tesla started sending them out in batches. So we expect that we're going to have a better idea soon of the kind of demand that Tesla received for the Roadster, because as you know, they only they locked out the first 1,000 for the Founder Series Roadster, and then after that, it's just a free for all for the rest. I don't know which one did you reserve.
I just got the cheap one. The only reason, honestly, I'm not a $200,000 car guy. For a lot of reasons, and money being probably the biggest one. The reason why I am even entertaining this idea right now is because, you know, A, it's an amazing car, but B, we do the referral program, and I'm close to 50%. I think I'll be about 50%. So $100,000,
that makes sense for
that car, that makes a lot of sense. Whether I keep it or not, I don't know. I mean, I look at it at this point as a $50,000 investment on at least a $100,000 return in 3 years. So it seems like a pretty good idea. And in the worst case scenario, I just get my money back. But
unless Tesla goes bankrupt in the next 2 years.
Yeah.
Or some, we think it's completely unlikely.
I think it's very unlikely, but not impossible.
Yeah.
If they maybe they release like 16 more products between now and then, and don't get quite all of them to market yet.
Yeah,
but as long as they can start making Model 3s, I think they'll be in good shape.
Yeah, for sure. And so today we're gonna start. We started out with that because it really just said just received his confirmation, and we just received the other reports on it. But today we're gonna also discuss our own Tesla service experience this week, because both Seth and I ended up at Tesla service this week. We're also gonna discuss the Tesla semi truck order that started rolling in increasingly over the last week. Maybe there's some sort of snowball effect going on, and we have a few other things that were very popular on Electrek this week that we'd like to discuss further and maybe take your questions. So if you want to ask question live, don't hesitate on the live chat right now on YouTube. And I guess we can start out with my service this week. I as you may know, I have a signature Model S from back in 2012 that was produced in December 2012, which makes it one of the first 2,000 vehicles ever made. I had an extensive...
And the first in Canada?
Yeah, it was apparently was the very first in Canada, as I'm told by the original owner of it. I wasn't the original owner. I bought it secondhand. And
that's pretty cool.
Yeah, maybe some kind of value added to it because of it, some sort of collector item. But I think we're far from that for now. But it's still an interesting vehicle since it's an old one, or one of the very early model. We can get a better idea of the age as a vehicle. And it was my very first visit at Tesla service for the car since I got it back in June. And it was actually a recurring problem that I first had right after the delivery, but I didn't have to go to the service center because they ended up sending a technician to my house at that point because I was living further away from the Tesla service center. And it was a weird issue with the trunk. The car doesn't detect that the trunk is actually closed, and it thinks it's open. But when you look at it, it looks closed, but maybe it's a little bit off. Like, you can see that it's not maybe completely closed. Very, very a weird issue. And they ended up just changing the latch at that point, and it completely fixed the issue. 2-3 months later, it comes up again. So this time they did more than just changing the latch. They also changed the sensor on it, or they played with it, depending on the, that's what they were saying in the notes for the service appointment. And great experience. I ended up going there. I was an hour late because of traffic. They still took me in easily, no problem. They ended up giving me a loaner, a nice Model S 100D, which I had some fun with because it's as autopilot, so it's not something that I experience every day, since my Model S doesn't have autopilot.
Not vegan white interior.
Yeah, I have the nice vegan white interior. The new seat, like I love that the 100D has a lot more range than my PV5. I love that the autopilot, of course. A little bit more power too. Dual motor, of course, all-wheel drive, which is great right now in Quebec with the snow coming. But I think by far the biggest difference is really the seats are amazing compared to even the premium seat that I have in my Model S Signature, but it's a very early version of it. And they don't suck, but they're not great either. And I give a 9 out of 10 on the new seat on the Model S, which are the same in the Model X that it has.
Yeah, I also upgraded from a really early model.
Yeah, so you see the difference every day for you. So I don't know about you, but in the new seat, my only problem with them is that the side supports are just a little bit too tight for me. Like if I'm really like completely sitting down in the seat, I feel like too much pressure on my side with the side support. If they were just half an inch wider, be perfect seat for me, really perfect, but still great though.
And, maybe you need to hit the gym, Fred.
Yeah, I'm too fat. That's my problem. And I didn't even end up having to bring back the car on the same day. Last night, one of the employees, after he was coming back from work, just brought back my car on down on the South Shore, and we just exchanged our key, and he went back to. With the loaner, so just easiest experience that you can imagine, and it was covered under the warranty for the CPO warranty. So with my car, since I bought it CPO from Tesla, a certified pre-owned, I had a 2-year warranty with it, still covered. Of course, the change were minor anyway, and they ended up also doing things I didn't even know about. They said that my front suspension was noisy. Which I didn't realize myself. So just by driving it, I guess in the service center, or if they did a test drive with it, I don't know. They figured out that it was noisy, and they replaced one part, which I don't know by heart right now, but I can check. Anyway, they did it for free, so I'm not complaining. But I haven't seen the difference yet with driving it earlier today. But I know that you also went to your service center.
So did they do the vacuum T in the back of the
I haven't checked the back.
They usually do some cool stuff like that. They give it like a very topical detailing, and they usually vacuum a T in the back.
Yeah, that would be Goodwill, right?
Yeah, they're really good. It's kind of the opposite of whatever you've experienced with a normal car dealer. They do more than they are expected, and they kind of treat you nicely, and the area is kind of nice, and the people who work there aren't.
Oh yeah, no complaint about the staff at all. The staff is great. They helped me out. So yeah, they found out that the vehicle front suspension is noisy, so they replaced a bar link that they said was loose. Nice of them.
So for me, my experience, I went to Tesla thinking earlier this year, thinking I wanted to upgrade to a Model X because my kids no longer fit in the back of the Model S I had with the jump seats. So safety, you know, all the stuff, Model X seemed like a good upgrade, a little bit higher. I know my wife certainly wants the SUV. So we spec'd out a 75 kilowatt hour model with a white one with pretty much basic everything.
And it has autopilot?
It had autopilot, yeah. So that was something, that was one upgrade we were okay with. And when we got there, one of the Tesla service folks, actually a great guy, over 5 years of working with Tesla, but he was like, you know what, let's look in the recently added inventory to see if there's anything, because they actually have a different inventory list at Tesla on their, I think it's like a Salesforce database or something, but they've got a whole lot more cars than they actually show on the website.
That's right. And sometimes they update it on the website and they just remove a ton of inventory and just replace it with something, and they move the car between inventory, new inventory, and loaner cars and test drive cars. So normally if you show up at the store, you can have access to a whole new inventory of cars.
Right. So it's a good idea if you're looking for a Tesla to actually go to the store and start looking through them. Anyway, so this guy, he found us pretty much what we were looking for. They had used as a loaner car in Boston, and they were going to give it to us for less money. Actually, so a couple other things. It had a tan interior instead of the white interior that we wanted. The wheels were, and this is important, were 22 turbines, which look sick, but in practice they're not really great, especially on New York roads.
And the 75 New York winters. The 75 that you were specing first had just 20-inch wheels, right?
Right. And that's the other thing. They gave us a 90 kilowatt hour. And what's even better, so this thing's it retailed for like over $100,000, but they gave it to us for I think around 85 or 90. So it was actually $25,000 off of the new price, and it only had 3,000 miles on it. So it's pretty good deal right there. Mm-hmm. But if you lease it, you and this is a 3-year lease, you only pay for half the value of the car over that 3-year period. But because they knocked $25,000 off, and basically, you know, the car is worth the same as it is new, you know, so 3 years later. So it's basically, they knocked $25,000 off of what I was going to pay over the 3-year period. So I ended up paying less than I was planning to pay for the 75 new. But, so the big but was that I got these huge rims that I, you know, they look great, but you know, they're really not practical in New York. And what we found was kind of a whammy is that not only do they, you know, they, when you hit a rock, you feel it. they handle performance wise great. Corning's great for a SUV, but
Model X with 22 inch rims, it feels like a sports car, which is insane because it's a huge SUV.
Yeah, it's a huge vehicle. It's like a big, like when you park it in a parking spot, you're like all to the edge on every side. And in our garage, it's like we have like an inch behind, an inch in front, and like, you know, it's just tight. So it's a big car. Anyway, so we have these huge wheels that I didn't bargain for, but also the thing that we didn't really think about is that these wheels get much worse mileage than the 20 inch of any sort. And that was proven this week, because we got snow tires, but we got them on 20 inch rims, and immediately, like right away, I was getting better mileage. Like getting to the Tesla store and getting back, I went from 400 watt hours per mile to 350. I mean, that's a huge difference, and that's with snow tires, not necessarily, you know, low rolling resistance tires that kind of come standard. So I mean, that's something to really consider when you're, I mean, I know the 22s look sick. They look great, but, and especially the black ones on black turbines on a white car.
Yeah.
That's like,
no, your car looks good.
Probably doesn't get better than that. Yeah. But, you're right off the bat, you're sacrificing, I don't know, I would say like 30 or 40 miles of range. I mean, we're getting the same range on the Model X 90 that we were getting on the Model S 60. So yeah. it was bad. And I'm kind of elated now because, you know, I've got all this extra mileage. I don't think I'm going to put the 22s back on until I have to take them back. They look great. They do. They look really, I mean, it's great, but I'm not that, like, I'm married. I don't, you know, I have kids. It's not my thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, that's, I think, so this is a broad statement. I think Tesla spends a lot of, like, they had those aero rims initially when they launched the Model S.
Yeah.
And I feel like maybe that's what they did their EPA testing with. But, you know, we found out in a couple posts, we put this out there that, like, what rims you choose on your car is a huge factor in what kind of mileage you'll get.
Yes. We had a post about that last month. Which
is it like 5% or something?
It depends because it's not the metrics that we put out weren't based exactly on a regular driving cycle that you'll find like with the EPA rating that we generally get. The test showed that in this specific environment, well, yeah, it was between 5 and going up to 10%, depending on a lot of different factors for sure. But yeah, it's definitely something to consider when you're buying your car. Well, of course, you can always change them after. If the ones that come with them, this is still a big difference. I think for the Model S, at least, it's it's the same thing for Model X, probably. I think it's like $4,000 the difference between the two, the standard ones.
It's for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a big difference financially too. But I guess we can move on unless you guys have any question about our service experience this week with our Model S and Seth's Model X. I see we have a few questions unrelated though. Electric Podcast, yeah, TuneIn. Yes, I suppose it's going to be available on TuneIn. I haven't used the app yet, but by the end of the week we should be on pretty much every possible podcast app at this point. We have the RS feed set up, which is on the post about the podcast right now on Electric. So if you go on Electric, it's going to be the first post that you see. You're going to have the link to subscribe to the podcast via iTunes or whatever podcast app you're using. We also have a question here for James Whittingham. Talks about the new Bloomberg study that came out today, which state that by 2026 they think batteries will be cheap enough that electric vehicles will reach cost parity with gas-powered cars. So he's asking out when you think EV cells will start to really take off. So I think EV cells are going to start to really take off when people are going to start to produce enough electric vehicles that whatever taking off means for you. But right now they're selling every EV that they can make. So as long as they produce
every,
more,
every good EV that they're making.
Sure. No, I'm not talking compliance cars. Not talking about Chevy
Honda Sparks Clarity
and stuff like that.
Yeah,
not the Honda Clarity and stuff like that. But yeah, I think 2026 personally, I think it's on the later end of the timeline that I have in mind. Because right now we're already seeing cars. If you look at Tesla specifically, if you look like at the Model 3 is competitive in terms of pricing for their vehicle in that price range, with a similar range, not exact, well, close to similar range. So,
and that's without a subsidy.
Without subsidies, we're talking about without subsidies, because that subsidy might go away soon. We don't know. I think between the 20, so for long we go, as years pass, it's not going to be about reaching price parity with a battery powered a battery powertrain and a gas powered car, like just talking about the powertrain. But if we look at just the whole car itself, the Model 3 is competitive with a BMW 3 Series, so there's a cost parity for the whole car there. Of course, probably if we split, we break down every component, maybe Tesla's powertrain costs more than the BMW i3, and Tesla maybe saves with a more minimalistic interior and stuff like that. But as time goes on, I think what we're going to see is we're going to see a cost parity come down in the different segments. So right now, maybe the cost parity is at the mid luxury level, and maybe soon it's going to be at the standard $20,000-$30,000 car, and maybe eventually it's going to be at the low urban economic car that you're going to have a cost parity.
And there's a lot of other things to consider here, because like are you including the cost of gasoline in the cost parity analysis?
Yeah, I'm not even talking about the cost operation right now. I'm just talking about
the car price off the assembly line.
Yeah,
because you save upwards of $1,000 per year driving electric versus gasoline, depending on where you live and how much you drive and all that stuff.
Well, worst case scenario, about 500, I think, and it can easily go to 2,000.
Yeah, and so that's a big, over 10 years, that's $10,000.
If you include that right now, a lot more EVs are technically already at cost parity.
Right.
But I think the study was talking more about the actual cost of the powertrain of a battery powertrain versus a gas powertrain.
Right. I mean, at that point, it may, like, when it costs the same to buy the exact same car,
it's game
and
over.
You still get all the benefits, then who the heck is going to buy a gasoline car?
At that point, it makes no sense.
Going into the middle of the wilderness or something that need like 600 miles and gas cans or something.
Yeah, because right now it's just a marketing thing. Like you know, the problem is communicating that cost of operation correctly to customers, to understand that you're actually saving money if you pay a little more right now. But that's why I think that the subscription and lease model can make a lot more sense in EV if you can play into the cost of operation aspect to it. But yeah, at that point, that is just the price directly from the price tag without accounting for any cost of operation. Then you'd be crazy not to buy an EV at that point.
Yeah,
I think you just
actually is in a way subscription model a little bit when you think about them putting in superchargers in urban areas. Like, so for people who park on the side of the street and don't have charging options at their apartment complex or however they live in the city, maybe their parking garage doesn't have a EV option. So Tesla's putting a bunch of superchargers into urban areas, and pretty much subsidizing the cost of the electricity for the vehicles that are kind of just hanging around the city and using those superchargers. So that, in a way, that's kind of already a beginning to that, subscription pricing, where you're not only getting a car, but you're getting the transportation fuel as well.
Well, Tesla actually, with the Tesla Semi, with the cost of the electricity locked in at a price, they took a step toward that direction, I think. Of course, we don't know exactly how they're getting that price yet, and it could change. But I think that's something that could eventually end up in their passenger vehicle too. So John Van Bockel asked if there's any news lately about the status of the EV tax credit. Last we heard was cut at, I'm still quoting John here. Last we heard it was cut at in the House bill, but preserving the Senate bill. Actually, I heard the other way around. I heard that the Senate was looking to remove the language that was removing the, it was ending the tax credit, but the House bill still had it. So
I think it's still uncertain, and it's going to be kind of,
Leader of the House Republican today said that they had the vote to pass the bill, the House bill. So,
the Senate.
So, if they do, we will need to see the language beforehand to see if it's actually still in there. But yeah, I wouldn't bet on it right now.
Yeah, I mean, if you're thinking about buying an EV in the next, year, I would seriously consider
doing it right now.
Yeah. And I know there's some Bolts out there. Like, I know you can pick up like some pretty good EVs. There's some Hyundai Ioniqs.
The Ioniq can work for a lot of people. Like, it checks a lot of boxes for a lot of people.
Yeah, I test drove that thing. I thought it was, coming from a Prius, I thought it was if you're thinking about a Prius, it's a great option. Even a Prius, like a Prius Prime, is not a horrible option, not a great option, but it's probably your worst EV option, but it's still an option.
It's still an option, but it can be your first choice. If it is, there's something wrong with you. Anyway, let's move on to some other top stories this week. Our post about the Tesla owner who ended up building a cryptocurrency mining rig inside his Model S was very popular this week for many different reasons, really, because we were just talking about the charging network and that Tesla is building the supercharger, which is still free to access for a lot of people right now. And the free power is something that is really attractive to the Bitcoin mining, not just Bitcoin, but any cryptocurrency mining community, because you're at the end of the day, your profitability comes down to your hardware costs, your computing hardware costs, and the electricity that feeds those hardware. So if you're not familiar with it, basically with Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies, the crowdsource the computing power that's required to run the ledger, which is called the blockchain that that keeps track of all the transaction of the currency, that requires a lot of computing power. So people set up some mining rigs, which are just graphic cards or other specific hardware just geared toward making the computation that needed to maintain those transactions and the ledger of the transaction, the blockchain. And there's a lot of money into it right now, because Bitcoin just rose to a market capitalization of over $100 billion. And you have a lot of other cryptocurrencies coming up there too, in the billions of dollars of network. So people are mining those cryptocurrencies, getting a few coins when they do. And one savvy Tesla owner ended up trying to draw power from his battery, that in turn was drawing power from a supercharger, where he was getting free electricity, in order to power a mining rig built into the back of his Model S. And I know you yourself had some experience drawing power from your Model S to power your house, right?
Yeah, so you can, there's poles on the front of the old Model S, and I think they're still easy to get to on the new Vasha version. But you can take any, here, I think I might even have one handy. Any one of these guys.
Yeah.
This is a inverter, and you just take 12 volt in like you would do any other battery thing, and you get 1 kilowatt of power out of these guys. And that one's from Best Tech, and it's, I think it's like $100 or something. But Tesla and like Chevy and a bunch of other EV companies have a 12 volt system, and they're like 300, 400 volt drivetrain system. And they have a not an inverter, but like a down voltage thing that shifts electricity from the big batteries to the 12 volt system. So you can plug into the 12 volt system, start draining that, and as soon as Tesla notes that the voltage in the 12 volt is going down and starts pumping electricity from the higher voltage system back into the battery. So technically you have like a system where you're getting super high voltage, and theoretically you're sending charge into the 12 volt system, and then that 12 volt system which I believe can run at about a kilowatt. I know on the Bolt it can go over a kilowatt, like 1.2 kilowatts. So that can run quite a few computers. You know, I saw that what he has in the car, I'm not sure how many can run off the 12 volt system like that. I don't know if he was actually tapping into his high voltage system.
Yeah, but, because he was claiming that his setup was requiring 2.8 kilowatts. So it's not clear how he was drawing the energy from his own battery pack.
You might be able to get something like that from the 12 volt system. I mean, seems a lot pretty high.
Yeah, it seems high.
But who knows? They might have that built into the system. That's something we should check. I think one of these days we'll do a because I've got a few of those kilowatt inverters. Maybe I can like daisy chain those and get a good reading on.
That'd be an interesting post. But even if he was able to draw that from his battery pack and then charge that from the supercharger for free, of course you save a few bucks depending on what would be your current electricity rate. But other than that, there's not much of any kind of advantages to mine from your car. Those things generate a ton of heat. So aside from like if you want to preheat your car with those computers, I don't think that's a very wise way to spend your money right now. But
yeah, not at all.
Yeah, it's not the best investment.
Also, your car is sitting in a supercharger when it could be actually driving you somewhere.
Yeah, too. Yeah, but still an interesting way to merge the Bitcoin community with the Tesla community, because we've heard of a few stories before when Bitcoin was first started to become very popular and the price skyrocketed, that people were buying Teslas with their Bitcoin earnings and stuff. So it's sort of a way for the two communities to come back together again.
But yeah, and we were actually just reading about SolarCoin, and you know, innovative as Tesla is, it would be kind of surprising if they didn't somehow enter or at least do something with the blockchain cryptocurrency.
Somehow. Yeah, a lot of people are starting to see a lot more application linked to the blockchain technology. I think we're going to see a lot more of that. But that was a cool weird stories story about Tesla this week. And in another weird story about Tesla this week that was very popular, four Tesla vehicles were stolen from Salt Lake City Tesla store last week. And when they were recovered later, so four different cars, four different thieves, and two of them claim that they were part of the Tesla family, or a member of the Tesla family gave them the car or gave them the key, just go away with that car.
Is that the Elon family or is that the Nikola?
No, Tesla family? The Tesla. So as most of you know, Tesla is named after the inventor and physicist Nikola Tesla, who died in the 1950s, I think. So he's long dead, never had any children. So he doesn't have any direct descendant at all. But I think his closest descendant right now is a great nephew from his sister or something like that. It's not that close of a descendant. And it doesn't, the man doesn't even have the Tesla name. Last we heard of him, it was about the, I don't know if you remember back when Elon Musk gave money to the Tesla Museum in New York or Connecticut. Was it Connecticut? Or
New York? No, New York. Long Island.
New York in Long Island. So someone reached out to him, a cartoonist reached out to him about saving the museum, and Elon ended up giving $1 million.
Yeah, it's the Oatmeal's Matt Ingram or somebody Ingram.
Yeah, maybe. But that guy, the cartoonist that you just mentioned, the relative to Nikola Tesla, joining in the effort to reach out to Elon Musk for him to give them money. I think he claimed to be the closest relative to Nikola Tesla. It wasn't that close. So the way I see it, I think those thieves thought that Tesla was like a family business and was named after a guy, and they probably don't know anything about Nikola Tesla or the company itself. But they ended up bulgarizing the Tesla store in Salt Lake City, and they got away with four Teslas. None of them they were Model S or Model X, but they were recovered pretty quickly, hopefully without any damage. And one of the guys that stole the car even ended up, because when they broke into the store, they stole the deed to the store, and he found a check for $50,000 that the store received from a customer, I assume, and he ended up signing his name on the back to endorse a check. Like, when we're talking about 1950s type of fraud here, that the guy attempted, it's like one of the dumbest thing either.
So these guys clearly didn't do their research, weren't very smart. So how could they be related to Tesla, really?
Yeah, well, if there's any moral to that story, that's Tesla need to upgrade their security system if people that dumb can just break into their store.
Right.
Unless they just like threw something on the window and the alarm. But that's the thing, because the police never... The only time that the police got involved, the first time that the police got involved, was after one of the guys with the stolen Tesla ended up pulling behind a state trooper, while he was himself pulling aside someone else, and the guy sort of gave himself up. So that's the first time that the police got involved, and they ended up at the Tesla store, and they realized it was burglarized. So something happened that there was no alarm or something like that until those guys get themselves up.
Yeah, they need to invest in some IP security cameras, maybe a wall safe to throw the keys in at night.
Yeah, the keys are so accessible. That's weird too. So one of the top comments of our article about it was from GGuys One. 1 year of Trump and even the crime business isn't what it used to be.
Yeah. That's
a pretty good one. Yeah, it's an easy slight on Trump, but I agree with the sentiment that those guys are pretty dumb.
that was kind of painful.
Yeah. So, and whenever we talk about stolen Teslas, like, it's the first question, generally how they got stolen. And for the most part, people just got access to the key fobs, like in this situation right here. So it's mainly about just keeping your key fob safe, which is the case for any car. But the second thing was always fun is that some people can just track it with the app. And we saw that just 2 weeks ago from a guy in Los Angeles that reached out to me when... He left his Model S at the parking lot at the airport, and he went out of the country. Then, just out of the blue, decided to check his Tesla app, which I think a lot of, from my own experience, at least I do it all the time when I'm away from the car, just to see what's up, and just to look where your car is. And anyway, and he did just that out of the blue. And to his surprise, his car wasn't at the parking lot in Los Angeles Airport. It was driving a few miles away in another neighborhood. So what he did, since he wasn't in the country, he wasn't sure what to do. He ended up calling his lawyer, and that's the person I talked to. I talked to his lawyer, who wants to talk to his lawyer. His lawyer, the owner, gave him access to his Tesla account, so you can just change on the Tesla app, change the account, and get to the other person account, then you can just see everything as if you had the car yourself. And then he called the police, and with the app was able to track the car with the police helicopter that just ended up reaching it very easily from the application. And then they stopped the car and managed to get it. And again, the way that they were able to get the car in the first place was because they had the keys. It's one of those parking lots with valet that you just leave the keys there. So that was the issue.
But yeah, that seems like the easiest way to steal a Tesla is just to get the key. But there were some interesting thefts in Europe.
Yeah, there were a series of thefts in the Netherlands earlier this year that didn't involve the key fob. At least the key fob wasn't stolen. I mean, because right now the car were never recovered, except for two of them. We're talking about a few cars here, maybe over a dozen, according to the local police. And right now, the leading theory is that they had the same problem with the release system, where they relay the signal from the key fob. If they're close enough, they can just steal the signal from the key fob and then enter the car and start it. So that's also a problem with other cars, not just Teslas. But we're talking about a more sophisticated level of thief than what we're seeing from a
right. And those guys steal the car and then they like sell it.
Yeah, they deactivate
the bottom of containers.
Yeah, they deactivate the GPS right away. Then it can be hours, and the car is somewhere else entirely, or starting to be dismantled for parts or something.
Right.
In other news, not Tesla news. We've been talking about Tesla for like 30 minutes, so we can I think we can change the subject. The biggest post that we had this week that people were pretty excited about actually wasn't about Tesla, which is a rare thing. It was about the solar-powered smart windows that had a new efficiency record. So why that's important is because so people right now have some sort of an issue with the aesthetic of solar panels, and aside from having it in the solar farm, which where it doesn't matter. If you have it on a roof, some people have issue the way it looks, so the aesthetic of it. So do you want to replace just existing component that you have to on buildings with solar cells in order to generate the electricity? And solar windows are an option here. So we're talking about solar cells inside a glass that you place on the window. Those things exist for a while now. But they weren't ever efficient enough to make sense financially in terms of generating power. They didn't make sense for they have heat and cooling advantages since they darken the room, so they have an advantage there. But getting electricity from the photons or from the solar wasn't great. But now they have a new record, John. Our solar and energy contributor John Fitzgerald Weaver posted an article on it on Electric that the National Renewable Energy Laboratory reached 11.3% efficiency on the cell. So that's a huge improvement. We're talking about the same level of efficiency that we're seeing in solar panels just a few years ago, maybe like not even a decade ago. Right now, the efficiency is higher for solar panels. We're talking about closer to 18-19% for most panels that are installed today. Some are even more efficient. I know, Seth, you have panels at your house.
Yeah, so I have 19.5% LG 305s. But what's important about these panels are they're transparent. They can go in windows, and you can flip them on and off. But you can build them in skyscrapers. So these huge glass buildings that you see can, theoretically be retrofitted. But more importantly, like the new ones that are being built can be built with these things. And then you start having these, they're called zero energy buildings or whatever. And the idea is that they actually produce more energy than they consume. So, as you have these, not only is it less work for the grid, but they're also putting out electricity. Maybe you put in the garage, you have a couple of electric carports. So, this kind of thing, people are worried about what electric cars effect on the grid will be as we move to 10% and 20% of cars being electric. Well, when you have all of these other types of developments happening at the same time, these buildings that are going to be producing more electricity than they use, all of a sudden it's not such a big deal anymore. And maybe these buildings can actually charge like 20 cars a day or 50 cars a day by themselves without the grid. And they're also not using any electricity. So it's these kind of things have to happen, and they are happening in different areas to get us off of fossil fuels entirely.
Yeah. So in his article, John Ware was also specifying that if we were to replace all the windows where it makes sense to use the solar windows instead, we could be alone here generating the current 80% of the current load required for the U.S.
Crazy. So
that's a lot of electricity right now. And we're just talking about windows. So a lot of people still have rooftop solar. There's still a ton of solar farms, community solar, and stuff like that. So there's not going to be just one solution, like you said. It's going to be just a mix of a ton of different solutions. And until now, solar windows didn't make a lot of sense, but they're starting to right now with the type of efficiency that they are reaching on those solar cells at the moment.
And just like everything, it's scale that's going to make these things really take off, because scale reduces the price. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, it's kind of like a no-brainer when it's only a few cents more to have these windows. And I think, I can't remember specifically, but I think these windows also darken. So during the middle of the day, less sun gets in. So
it's about just
cooling costs as well.
Yeah, overall energy efficiency. It's not just the energy generation, the aspect of it, it's just being more energy efficient as a whole. Moving on to another of our interesting article this week, Tesla Semi. So we're getting those every day now, basically, that a lot of people, a lot of companies, not just companies, just like owner operators too, can reserve the Tesla Semi now. But we're mainly hearing about larger fleet operators at the moment. And the latest one this week, the most important one maybe, DHL, the delivery giant out of Germany, but they operate everywhere. They ordered 10 electric trucks from Tesla to operate in North America. Because right now, you can actually, what we learned also this week is that you can't pre-order the car in Europe. The specification are just for the U.S., not just for the U.S., North America, U.S. and Canada. They both work for there, so you can just reserve the truck for delivery in Canada or the U.S. But some European companies ended up reserving a few anyway with U.S. partners. So they team up with a U.S. fleet operator in order to reserve the truck. You're just going to import it in Europe. Probably find their own way to make it, to homologate it with the European regulation.
Yeah, it's not just the trucks either. I mean, there's a whole energy component, which is probably a harder thing to work out with the European market.
You mean the
mega charging?
Yeah, the charging infrastructure. Yeah, that's the thing. I'm curious when we're gonna see the first mega charger. I keep looking for whenever there's a new supercharger coming up. I keep checking to see if maybe it also includes a mega charger with it. But so far, no luck with that. So if you guys hear anything about that, make sure to let us know.
I'm gonna bet that the first mega charger is somewhere between Sparks and Fremont. That's just my guess.
Yeah, that makes sense too.
Or at Fremont or at Sparks or both.
Yeah, because Tesla confirmed last week that the Jérôme Guillaume, which is the VP of the truck program, gave a presentation in Europe about the Tesla Semi and ended up revealing a few interesting about it, including the fact that Tesla is going to be their first home customer for the Tesla Semi, with a route between Fremont and the Gigafactory in Nevada and Spark, Nevada, like you said. And that's actually a very perfect route for it, because we're talking about 257 miles between the two locations. So if they were saying that it's 500 miles, 250 each way, they're pretty close to it. So that's pretty interesting.
Yep. And I mean, theoretically, Sparks is probably higher up than Fremont, since Fremont's sea level, and they're going to be carrying a load down. So maybe they'll recover some energy coming down the hill there. And you know, maybe they can make the full round trip out of Sparks on their 500 mile battery. Mm-hmm. Be interesting to see.
Yeah, they also mentioned a few other things, like he confirmed the fact that they're gonna have the same weight capacity of a payload capacity as a regular diesel truck. So a lot of people were concerned about that because of the weight of the batteries. And last week on the last podcast, we were speculating that there's a battery breakthrough that's enabling the Tesla Semi, whether it's because of volumetric energy density. Maybe not, can probably fit inside the form factor of the Tesla Semi, but for weight, that's a completely different thing. So the energy density in terms of weight makes no sense with a 1 megawatt hour battery pack right now. And now Gilliam added the fact that they are aiming for the same payload, which means that they need to have the same weight for the actual truck, or at least per axle, because the weight is actually calculated by per axle. But that's pretty easy with the battery pack. So you can just put the weight between the axle with the battery pack. It's actually easier than with the large diesel engine. But he confirmed that they're aiming for the same payload. So that means a similar weight of 15 to 17,000 pounds. And so that pretty much confirmed that they are basing those number on a new type of battery, or a big improvement on current lithium batteries in terms of energy density and weight.
Yeah, that kind of goes back to our first question about the, you know, when, you know, is it 2026 where the battery technology becomes viable? I mean,
that was more about the cost of it.
The cost, but I mean,
well, that's also a nice background.
When you look at the two vehicles that Tesla announced that last month or this month, the truck somehow has to get that many batteries inside under a weight barrier. The Roadster, similar time frame, has to get two times a model, you know, the biggest Model X battery, two times into something the size of the Roadster, and for not a crazy price. Well, a little bit crazy price.
Yeah.
But size-wise, it's kind of nuts that you can fit two Model X battery, full, you know, the biggest Model X inside a small car. So something has to happen, like, with the battery size.
Yeah, definitely.
And I don't think it's just the 2070 form factor. I think it's maybe it is the form factor, but they're just so much more dense energy wise. I don't know.
Yeah, for me, that's to be a new technology altogether for that kind of weight that they are talking about here. Because if you compare it to the current weight of a Model S battery pack, or did we ever get the weight of the Model 3? I don't think we ever got the weight of the Model 3 battery pack. The Model 3, it's 3,600 pounds. For the standard version, 36 and 39, I think, 39 for the long range. So that can give you an idea, actually, since we're talking about a 50 kilowatt pack for the standard version, a 75 for the bigger ones, and a 25 with about 300 pounds.
So that's exclusive information that you just rattled off there. Nobody's heard that publicly yet, have they?
No, I think I shared the weight of the cars and the energy capacity of the pack before. Okay.
So that's, yeah. It's a 300 pound difference between the big pack and the
small pack. Maybe a little less than 300 pounds, but about 300 pounds, and there are 25 kilowatt hours difference. But that's the thing too. You can't really go off that exactly, because that's just more cells in the same pack. So they're adding they're not even adding a module, because the way that Model 3 battery pack is made, you have four different modules, and they have different number of cells per modules between the two different battery packs. So that's all this. So you're only talking about adding cells. So it would be interesting to do the difference with, like, about 300 pounds for 25 kilowatt hours on Tesla's latest cells. We have to assume that the 2170 on the Model 3 right now are Tesla's latest cells made by Panasonic. But that's just the cells themselves, because the battery pack architectures architecture for the Tesla Semi maybe is different than the Model 3 battery pack. So maybe there's more cells per modules. Maybe there's just more modules. So we don't know that. So that'd be speculation just to base on that. But doesn't make sense right now with the kind of energy density that you find in the Model 3. I don't think.
Yeah, and so that's actually good news for different applications like airplanes. We know Tesla's founders met over the discussion of electric-powered vertical takeoff and landing airplanes. So, you know, as we get lighter and lighter batteries and cheaper batteries, all of a sudden air travel makes a lot more sense.
Yeah. Well, Helen H. says that there seem to be no improvement in energy density in the Model 3 because of its 5 amp hour cells in the 2170, which I think is right. I think it's 5 amp hour, but that doesn't mean that there's no energy density. We don't know the weight of those cells, so it's not that you don't have enough metrics to say that there's no energy density improvement. But I think he's right. I think those are 5 amp hour cells in the
Model 3.
They were 3.6, is that
3.7
or something like that. And right. Graphing baby, Tesla figured out all the mess. Yeah, that's the holy grail to try to, well, because there's one thing we know, that graphene batteries are indeed more energy dense. There's no doubt about that, and they can actually last longer also based on the initial laboratory tests, but that's a thing. They're just in the lab. I don't know of any companies right now, any credible companies at least, that are manufacturing graphene in big enough quantities that they make cells and they make sense to batteries. I mean, batteries are becoming a commodity right now. They're making billions of them. Like, literally billions of cells are going into cars right now. So if you need graphenes into each of those cells, you need a producer of a graphene in a volume that doesn't exist right now, not even close. So if that's it, if Tesla figured out a way to manufacture graphene in volume, that'd be great. But wouldn't be my first guess right now.
And certainly not for the Model 3.
Yeah, oh, no, we're not talking about Model 3. We're talking about the big battery breakthrough that was needed in order to enable the Tesla Semi and the Roadster and all the specs that they announced for those two cars last month. But it's fun to think about.
Yeah, so we're coming to the up to the end of the hour. Is there any last questions out there, or did we cover everything, Fred?
Well, we did cover all the articles that we said we're gonna talk about and the service stuff, and we have a last minute Tesla Roadster confirmation, so we're gonna probably have an article about that up soon. But yeah, Tesla sent out the first batch of confirmation for the Roadster reservation, which I think could probably lead to Tesla maybe releasing some information soon about the demand for the vehicle. That would be nice to know if maybe they actually already filled in the 1,000 reservation for the Founder Series. We don't know. That'd be something cool.
That would be something cool. So that would be 1,000 people putting down $250,000. So that's $250 million of cash.
Yeah, of interest. That'd be something.
And then however many people who didn't need to get the Founder Series. And I know a lot of the people who are getting referrals are pretty excited about the opportunity to get a less expensive Roadster. We've been talking about kind of behind the scenes is, like, a few years down the line, is Tesla going to have a Roadster that's more like a Miata, where affordable, basically, where maybe it's not 200 kilowatt hours, maybe it's 100 or 50. And maybe it doesn't go 250 miles per hour. It only goes 150 miles per hour. And 0 to 60 is 3.5 seconds instead of 1.9.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that they can get rid of. Like, you don't even need technically even Joel Mortar. If you don't want to gear it toward performance at all, you can just go with one rear mortar. You can much smarter battery pack. You just
basically it's got three motors, so you could only have two and still save money.
Yeah, well, you could sell just for one if you want, just to go after the Miata market. But yeah, if you just want the design of the road, because the design is insane of the new next generation Roadster. And if you just want a nice design, maybe not the same exactly, because you want to keep that for the higher end of the market, which Tesla is addressing right now with the 2020 Roadster. But yeah, a cheaper version with a similar design to see. Is it even a Roadster if it has four seats? Doesn't by definition a Roadster is two seats?
I don't know. We don't even know what the back seats look like right now, but
yeah, that's true.
I mean, when you consider like the Corvette ZR1 that just came out at the LA Auto Show, like that car is just insane compared to like the ZR1. They shouldn't even announce the 0-60 speed, because the 0-60 was like, 3 seconds, and yeah, it's not even close to the Roadster, and it's, twice as big because it's all engine.
Yeah, so they have to rethink the way they talk about those specs now with those cars because of the Roadsters.
Right. It's nobody's impressed by any internal combustion car engine spec anymore.
We're going to end on this note, though. If you check out on Electric right now, we just posted an article about the Rimac, the new Rimac coming out that they just teased today. If there's one car I think that could compete with the next gen Roadster, it's going to be whatever Rimac is working on right now. I really like that company. They're just relatively small. They're starting to get there, though, maybe a few hundred employees at that point. But I always like what they were doing. They were very early in the EV space with the next generation EVs that came out with lithium batteries. And early on, they had some great products, well-rounded products. If something can compare to the next gen Roadster, I think it might be Rimac.
Yeah, Mate Rimac seems like a really nice guy, really smart guy. They've got some other products. They make a really cool bike called the Grape, yeah, which is almost like a motorcycle in a pedal bike form factor. They also do OEM work for I think it's a Swedish,
yeah, Koenigsberg, like that. But Aston Martin, they're going to be in the new Aston Martin.
Right, so they're doing a lot of OEM work. The Croat guy in town knows him, so I always get a lot of backstories about him. It seems like a really incredible.
Yeah, he's a young guy too. I think it's he's not even 30. I think maybe close to 30. Yeah, they do impressive stuff there. So check it out. I think they're gonna be a company to watch. And thanks for listening to the second episode of Electrek. We welcome any feedback that you guys have either in the comment section of the YouTube video or by email or anything else, because we're still new to the podcasting world and we can really use your feedback. Other than that, for the first time, the episode is actually gonna be on the podcasting app because last week it wasn't. If you check the podcast post on Electric right now, you have all the links, and we're going to add them to the description of the video also, so that you can put the podcast RSS feed in your podcast app.
All right. That's with that, have a great week. We'll see you next time. 4 o'clock Fridays, Eastern time. We're always here.
All right.